tonight. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our engineer, PJ Elliott, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on The Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Happy Friday, and welcome to The Sunny Side of Sports. The countdown continues for the Tokyo Olympics, the year's biggest international sporting event. We're now 168 days away to the multi-sports jamboree in Japan. For the first time, a woman will launch the Olympic torch relay in Athens. Greece's Olympic Committee says it picked 2016 shooting gold medalist Anna Korakaki as the first torchbearer for the 2020 Tokyo Games. The 23-year-old Korakaki will receive the Olympic flame from an actress playing the role of a high priestess in a flame-lighting ceremony on March 12th at Ancient Olympia in Greece. After Korakaki runs the first part of the relay, she will pass the torch to Mizuki Noguchi, the winner of the women's marathon in the 2004 Athens Olympics. Noguchi will be the first Japanese person to carry the 2020 Olympic flame when she collects it in Olympia. Following the 8-day Greek leg, the flame will be handed over to Tokyo Organizing Committee officials in Athens. The Olympic flame will then be transported by a special aircraft from Greece to Japan. The torch will arrive in Japan on March 20th, and its journey around the country will begin from the northeastern Tohoku region, which was widely affected by the 2011 earthquake and tsunami that killed nearly 16,000 people. Both local organizers and the International Olympic Committee want to use the Tokyo Games to aid the region's recovery, and some Japanese authorities have described the Games as the Reconstruction Olympics. The Olympic flame will visit all 47 prefectures in Japan. The torch relay will formally end July 24th when the final runners carry the flame into Tokyo's rebuilt national stadium at the opening ceremony. In more Olympic news, Ugandan fighters are preparing for Africa's Olympic qualifying boxing tournament, which will be staged in Dakar, Senegal, from February 20th to February 29th. 13 boxers are expected to represent Uganda at the qualifying competition in Senegal. Uganda's national boxing team is nicknamed the Bombers, and Magume Davis Rocka Wins recently visited the Bombers training camp in Kampala.
Uganda Bombers team captain Prince Boy Chimerasha Dale leads a group of 23 boxers in warm-up exercises at Luzira Prison Gym. The boxers are training ahead of the Olympics qualifier in Dakar, Senegal, later this month. Shadil, who represented Uganda at the 2018 Australian Commonwealth Games, says he and his colleagues are in good shape to win medals in Senegal.
We're trying to perfect our craft. We're trying to put up some speed, trying to condition in the body and doing other small stuff that are needed in our training so that when we go for competition, we're ready to do everything. So far we're in the competition pre-training. Now we're just correcting things that a little mistakes that we want to be perfect because we want to go there and put up competition and we qualify.
The 69 kilograms welterweight fighter says it's a dream for him to go for the Olympics, a dream he has harbored since he was 9 years. Fresh from winning silver at the 2019 All African Games, boxer Isaac Masembe says he now has enough experience.
The last time I lost on the finals, but I know it was God's plan. So this time I know what our coaches they have given me. I can make it, I can do it. This time I'm stronger than never. I saw a lot of techniques there, and I saw some punches the judges need so that they can give you the fight.
Another boxer, 22-year-old Alex Mumbele, who was born and raised in Sweden, says he's optimistic he will make it to the Olympics.
I got a lot of experience there in Europe, so now I'm here, I'm using my talent. I'm not born here, but I feel at home when I'm here. I like the people, I like the sport. I come from Uganda, my parents are born here, so I wanted to make my family members proud, and even for myself. And you know, in future, you never know, I can tell my future children about this story.
Mombele fights in the heavyweight category. Doreen Nasali is one of the female boxers here. She says Uganda will, for the first time, have a female boxer at the Olympics.
Our coaches are giving us what they are supposed to give us, and we are hoping to bring back victory. We're hoping to go there, beat those guys there, and we come back with medals.
In a bid to improve gender equality, a number of female boxers have been tripled from 36 women at the Rio 2016 Olympics to 100 for this year's event. Patrick Lehanda heads the 8-man Bombers coaching staff.
Mostly we're working on power, their strength and movement, and maybe more jabs to the opponents. Because when you're in the ring, it's like mostly you do jabs when going inside, but those guys who do jabs when they're retreating, they're not on advantage side. So my boxers are fine, they're in good shape. I don't have anyone who is injured. All are fine, ready for the championship.
Former Uganda national team boxers have been visiting the camp to share tips and motivate the fighters. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Hello listeners, this is Masembe Isaac, silver medalist from All Africa Games 2019. Listen to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In more Olympic news, Nigeria's national women's basketball team, nicknamed the Tigress, has moved a step closer to qualifying for Tokyo 2020 after an 85-51 victory over Mozambique in Belgrade, Serbia. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye called Belgrade, where he reached the co-captain of the Nigerian team, Evelyn Akator.
First of all, I'm happy we won the game. We made a lot of mistakes, but we were able to come through the second half of the game, which was better than the first. So I'm happy that we won. I'm happy that we won the game. Yeah, Mozambique is past, so now we need to focus more on Serbia and USA.
Your next match is against Serbia, and it's the host country. Yeah. What are your expectations? How do you see that game?
No game is easy. No game. Every game is a difficult task for us, but we just need to play together, come through, like just do better than what we did yesterday and play as a team, play good defense, and I think we will fight through whatever or no matter the result.
Are you optimistic that Nigeria's female national team will qualify for the Olympic Games?
Positive that we are going to qualify for the Olympics, in as much as we've been working towards this direction for since last year, we've put in the work as a team. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to make it to the Olympics. But again, we just need to keep praying that Mozambique doesn't shock the USA team or bring up an upset, you know? So that's our prayer.
What will be your message to Nigerians? A lot of Nigerians celebrated your victory yesterday and are still celebrating it now. What will be your message to Nigerians as you play against Serbia and the U.S.?
I would say that they should keep supporting us and keep pushing and praying for us that we should qualify for the Olympics. It would be the greatest joy of us and also the Nigerian supporters to see us in the Olympics. So I would say they should keep supporting us and just pray for us to qualify.
That's Evelyn Akator, the co-captain of Nigeria's national women's basketball team, nicknamed the Tigress. And she spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Belgrade, Serbia.
Greetings, this is Evelyn Akator, co-captain of the Nigerian women's national basketball team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa. Your weekend destination.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Two of the biggest stars in tennis, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal, are playing each other this Friday evening in a special Match for Africa charity event in Cape Town, South Africa. Joining us with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. For nearly two decades, in tournament after tournament, tennis fans have crossed their fingers with the hope of witnessing a meetup between on-court rivals Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. So when Friday's Match for Africa was announced late last year, the event became the hottest ticket in Cape Town. Months ago, event organizers put 48,000 tickets on sale, and they sold out within minutes. Match for Africa 6 is being held in Cape Town Stadium, and with a capacity of over 50,000, it will likely be the largest tennis attendance in history. And Roger Federer says the event could only be done alongside Rafa Nadal.
For me, it was only by Rafa who could make this event truly special for the people here, because I have the connection to Rafa. If maybe somebody can bring him down to South Africa, it's me. And I asked him, and he said yes right away, and we've been fighting over a date for the last 2 years. So I finally got one out of him.
Federer and Nadal faced each other in the inaugural Match for Africa back in 2010. And ahead of Friday's match, Federer spoke about his admiration for his upcoming opponent and his growth as a player.
You know, I remember Rafa when he was younger and he was so shy, and he was looking up to me, and he said, whatever Roger wants, I'm happy with that. And then he grew in a much stronger character, you know, and we had still a good time, but obviously the rivalry grew as we were 1-2 and 2-1 the whole time. And then today, I think with all the time that has passed, we see that we're on the final stretch in some ways, and we see life also very differently. But I think we have an ultimate respect for one another, like I have for anybody who has achieved as much as he has, regardless of all the records that he's about to break of mine or vice versa. I think we're happy for one another. And so for me, I'm very happy and very excited that he's here in Cape Town coming and playing, you know, again in a completely different place and different surroundings that we've ever even been in. So it's going to be wonderful.
Rafa Nadal also spoke about his special relationship with Federer ahead of the match, saying, quote, Roger and I have shared so many magical moments on and off the court. Traveling with him to Cape Town and playing for the benefit of children is something I am very excited about. It will be my first time in the region with Roger as a tour guide. That will be fun, and Federer might well be a suitable tour guide, although Friday's match will be the first match for Africa to actually be played on African soil. It takes place in the country Federer's mother is from, which he says makes the event even more special. In each of his five previous Match for Africa events, Federer raised in excess of $1 million, a figure he hopes to repeat on Friday. And with Nadal on board, plus a celebrity doubles match featuring Microsoft founder Bill Gates and South African comedian Trevor Noah, Federer says that amount is likely to be surpassed.
We hope to raise, at least $1 million. I think it's going to be more than that. Obviously coming from ticket sales, from sponsors, but then also we have a foundation dinner the night before, where Bill Gates is also taking part, and we're getting together and having a nice chat also with Rafa and Bill. We're all going to get together. So you add all these things together, and I think we're going to raise substantial money.
All proceeds from Friday's match will go to the Roger Federer Foundation that supports children's education in Africa. And Federer says he prefers to stay behind the scenes of his organization and let the work speak for itself.
I've been rather shy, to be honest, to make these matches for Africa. Because I always felt a little bit uncomfortable shouting about charitable work. I just feel like it's something I do with passion. But it does shine a light on philanthropy, on what I do. And it connects all the dots for me with playing tennis, raising money, and also showing the people what I do. And you can inspire others. Others inspire me.
By the way, Sonny, the latest reports say that to date, the Roger Federer Foundation has raised over $52 million to fund education, transport, and food for children in Africa. And as for the Match for Africa, Federer is undefeated in all five previous events. And that is all from me for today and for the week. More sporting news to come. Sonny, back over to you. Have a good weekend.
You have a good weekend too, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, VOA's Jim Stevenson will look back at the recent Australian Open tennis titles won by Novak Djokovic and Sofia Kenin.
I am grateful to have an opportunity to win another Australian Open trophy, obviously, at this stage of my career.
Serb tennis great Novak Djokovic had a second straight Australian Open title on his to-do list for 2020.
Grand Slams are the ones that I value the most. They are the ones that I prioritize. Before the season starts, I try to set my form, shape for these events where I can be at my prime tennis and mental and physical abilities.
Djokovic survived a long, tough final against Dominic Thiem of Austria, 6-4, 4-6, 2-6, 6-3, 6-4, in just under 4 hours in Melbourne.
I was on the brink of losing the match. Dominic is a fantastic tennis player that plays with tremendous amount of power in his shots, especially from the forehand side. He uses his slice really well, so he disrupted my rhythm and my game at one point, and he was a better player. I mean, he one point and probably one shot separated us tonight.
Thiem expected a razor-thin margin either way against one of the big three men's players that include Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal.
Novak is part of three guys who are by far best players ever to play tennis, and if you play a Grand Slam finals against them, I mean, it's always going to be a match where very small details are deciding.
The 26-year-old Thiem was completely drained after his duel with the 32-year-old Djokovic.
I've rarely felt physically that tired, especially now after all the tension is gone. I mean, I played unbelievable intense match against Rafa, such an intense match against Sasha in the semis. And today again, I think almost 4 hours, so that was very demanding.
Because the match was so close, he feels comfortable he did what he could.
Maybe I could have converted the break point in the fourth set, where I could have the lead 2-1, but then I think he had some issues in the second set. He recovered very well. He played really good after in set 3 and 4, and of course there were some small mistakes here and there, but they are happening, and at the end was a super close 5-setter, and I don't really regret anything.
Djokovic says it's been a long start to the year, which will take even longer for him to reflect on.
I feel exhausted at the moment. You know, it's been a very successful but long month here in Australia, and I'll probably won't be able to comprehend the achievements I had in my career, especially at Grand Slams, until I retire from tennis.
Djokovic claims a record 8th Australian Open, 17th major, and reclaims the world number one ranking. The season has barely begun, and he's pleased.
I'm super happy with the way I started the season. You know, it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the year. I've had that privilege to win this big tournament for 8 times and start off the season with a Grand Slam win. You know, significantly boosts your confidence, and your expectations are quite high, you know, for the rest of the season. But whatever happens, the season is already successful.
I knew I had to take my chance. I had to be brave. I'm playing two-time Grand Slam champion, and all respect to her. She played a really tough match, and every point was such a battle, and a lot of moving, a lot of emotions on court from both sides. And yeah, I knew I needed to come up with the best shot, and 5 best shots of my life. I mean, let's go. It got me to win a Grand Slam. All right, I'll take it.
American Sofia Kenin won her first Grand Slam tennis title with a 4-6, 6-2, 6-2 win over Garbine Muguruza of Spain. 21-year-old Kenin is the youngest American woman to win the Australian Open since Serena Williams in 2002. Fifth game of the final set gave her the confidence to close out the match.
That's the game that I feel like changed things, and I had to play some best tennis, and I did, and it was after that I was on fire and I was ready to take the beautiful trophy.
Muguruza agrees that fifth game was the turning point.
Yeah, it was a very important moment of the match. I think she found very, very good shots during the match, and especially in the important moments, I think she, you know, came out with winners and just hitting the ball very good.
The two-time Grand Slam champion just could not keep up, even though she felt she played well.
I think in important moments, I didn't find my shots. I think she found her shots, I didn't find my shots. And I did feel a little bit of lack of energy after so many matches, and physically it was a tough battle out there. So, you know, it's just a tough moment. Right now, it's tough to, you know, to be happy, although it has been an incredible tournament.
Muguruza takes the runner-up title as a positive.
You know, I try to have a good perspective and not be too dramatic. You know, okay, you lost the match, it was an important one, but hey, I'm here. I gave myself a chance to be in a final, and then you realize that.
Kenin has used her short span of experience well.
I knew I needed to establish myself to get to where I am, and you know, all the confidence has come with all the matches that I've had, the success I've had in 2019, WTA Most Improved Player of the Year. So, FYI. but I've always had that. Match play has really helped me, and all the confidence that I'm getting is because of that, and I see that things are happening for me and everything is just falling into place.
She is happy for her accomplishment and those around her.
These past 2 weeks have been a lot of emotions, you guys could see after the match how much it all meant to me. This is just such an honor. I'm so proud of myself, so proud of my dad, my team, everyone has been around me. We worked all hard, we've been through tough times, but you know what, we did it, we fought, and yeah, I'm like on cloud 9 right now.
That's American tennis player Sofia Kenin on cloud 9 after winning her first major title at the Australian Open in Melbourne. And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that spicy and audio-licious Australian Open package. And that wraps up the February 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to my producer, Nadia Taha. Thanks also to Voice of America engineer PJ Elliott.
And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This weekend, tune in and treat yourself to an hour of amazing Pan-African music. Current Afropop, Coupe Décalé, Gospel Crossover, Afrobeats, Bonga Flavor, and neo-traditional tunes will delight and excite you. The chill, classic throwback sounds of Wasalun, Maskandi, and Juju music will relax you and make you smile. That is so beautiful. Oh, say it one more time. And Song of the Week, Shekere, by Yemi Alade and Angelique Kidjo will make you want to get up and dance. It's going to be so much fun. So join me this Sunday and the following Saturday at 1505 and 20500 UTC.
On Issues in the News, listen to a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week that include the acquittal of President Trump on two articles of impeachment. Join moderator Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, panelist Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal. Listen Saturday and Sunday. Host Kim Lewis and VOA senior TV correspondent Chris Simpkins discuss little-known history facts about the slaves that built the U.S. Capitol and most of the monuments, memorials, and famous buildings in Washington, D.C., in addition to other historical contributions with Jesse Holland, author of Black Men Built the Capitol. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Ilan Goldenberg, director of the Middle East Security Program at the Center for a New American Century, and Ellen Lapson, professor and director of the Center for Security Policy Studies at George Mason University, discuss the timing and politics of the Trump administration's long-awaited Middle East peace plan. They tell host Carol Castiel that the plan has little chance of implementation. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
African Beats.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
And to AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.